Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, the programs, social justice, the Catholic Church, or interfaith. Today, my visitors are Dr. Maureen Sear and Jocelyn Armstrong. Maureen and Jocelyn, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Oh, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Some of our listeners might remember Jocelyn, who has come to the Muffin Talk a couple of times. She is the chair of the Board of Trustees of the Center for Religious Studies, and she's also vice chair of the Auckland Interfaith Council. Today, Jocelyn has brought a special guest from Scotland, Dr. Maureen Sear, the Director of Interfaith Scotland. A special welcome to Maureen.
Thank you. And I'll probably just say it's Maureen Sire, because if my husband hears this, he always goes, oh, it's Sire, it's not Sear.
Okay, we'll remember that. Sorry.
No worries.
It's taken me some time to learn that.
Yeah.
And Maureen, just like Jocelyn, you've been involved in interfaith work for a long time.
I have.
And how did you start getting involved in it?
Well, the first involvement in interfaith actually was when I was at university in Aberdeen. I studied at Aberdeen University in my 30s, actually, because I had four children in my 20s and brought them up first and then went to university. And at Aberdeen University in the 1990s, there was an interfaith group held at the Chaplaincy Centre there. And I thought, I'd love to go along to that. I'm a Baha'i by religion, so I'm really interested in all the world's faiths. And I thought having a dialogue with people from other faith traditions would be fun. I went along, and actually it was fun. I loved it. And the whole 4 years that I did my undergraduate degree at Aberdeen University, I went every time there was an interfaith meeting, made friends with people from all different faith traditions and learnt a lot. So I also did religious studies, anthropology and cultural history at university. So in a way, the interfaith dialogue really helped me put a context for some of the things I was reading and understanding from my religious studies at the university. So it was great. It was a really good introduction.
Mm-hmm. And today you're the Director of Interfaith Scotland.
Can
you tell us more about this organisation or group?
Interfaith Scotland actually came into being in 1999 at the same time that the Scottish Parliament was formed. And it really came into being because the faith communities and the four local interfaith groups that were existing at that time really wanted to have a voice in this new Scottish Parliament, this reformed Scottish Parliament. And they wanted that voice to be a multi-faith voice. And so they decided it would be a really good time to form a national interfaith organisation. At that time it was called the Scottish Interfaith Council. It's now morphed into Interfaith Scotland. And so there was a consultative body formed to look at, you know, what would it look like, what would it feel like, and eventually they decided it would be a membership organisation representing all the different faiths in Scotland. So in 1999 it was formed, so our 20th anniversary next year. And then in 2002 they received the first funding from the Scottish Government to get a development officer. I had just returned from 5 years in Samoa in the South Pacific where I was doing my doctoral research, and I was looking for work that really that outside of academia, actually, because I had so enjoyed the community work in Samoa. And when the job came up for a development officer for Interfaith Scotland, I thought, that's the job for me. I hope I get it. And so I applied, and, you know, the rest is history, so to speak. So and Interfaith Scotland has been, you know, steadily working, increasing its work across the whole of Scotland in the last 20 years. So.
Are there many different faiths in Scotland?
There are, definitely. There would be as much diversity, I would think, probably as, you know, as Auckland. Auckland's an incredibly diverse city, so are the big cities in Scotland. The only thing that we have missing are the Pacific Islanders, which I'm really sad about because, you know, it would be fantastic to have Maori and Pacific Islanders in Scotland, but it's too cold. I don't think the majority want to live there. But in terms of all the other diversity, we have, you know, Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Baha'is, Latter-day Saints, you know, just all different, you know, all sorts of faith traditions in Scotland. And they get on great.
Oh, that's good.
Most of the time.
For those of you who have just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Centre in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Centre. My visitors today are Maureen Sire and Jocelyn Armstrong, and the two of them are both very much involved in interfaith work. Jocelyn, you have been in Scotland, and you are also the vice chair of the Auckland Interfaith Council, as I mentioned before, and you're involved in the Centre for Religious Studies. Can you, in Auckland, can you tell us what you see as differences between Interfaith Scotland and the Auckland Interfaith work?
I was very keen to talk with Maureen when I knew that she was director of Interfaith Scotland, because I was very aware of the interfaith councils around New Zealand, and they're growing in number. Maureen actually found us a new one this week, as a little interfaith council started in Kerikeri. And she's also been as far south as Dunedin, where there's an interfaith council. But I was very aware how these councils are voluntary, and it, we have all these marvellous volunteers all through the country doing the work. But I could see when I knew about Interfaith Scotland that we could do with in this country a professional centre, an office where you had paid staff who could do the continual daily work in a way that could help all the other interfaith councils. So I came home from Scotland, and I'd also been to another meeting where I met a lot of people who were staffing interfaith institutes around the world, came home with that idea. And so out of the experience of Interfaith Council, the Auckland Interfaith Council, I could see the need for this deeper, the deeper work that could be provided by a national religious diversity centre.
So all the Auckland interfaith work is all done on a volunteer basis?
Absolutely. And it takes a lot of time when you're doing public meetings and trying to draw the different religious groups together.
And so you also talk about lack of funding or the support from the government. I understand that the two of you had a meeting with the New Zealand government recently. What are you taking home with this meeting, after this meeting?
First of all, I want to say it was, for me, from Scotland, a great honour to be there in Wellington, and to be there at the centre of New Zealand government and to meet so many wonderful people, really working for the common good of your country. I'm also very proud of our Scottish Parliament and all the good work that it does. What I was very impressed with yesterday was the number of people who turned up to hear us talk about interfaith work in New Zealand and in Scotland. I mean, there was, I would say, close to 100 people at the meeting. It was wonderful to have it sponsored by, I think it was one of the ministers.
Adrian Rurafe is the Member of Parliament. He's the Assistant Speaker in the House and the Member of Parliament for the West Coast, and he hosted us. And we were in the banquet hall. Mm-hmm. So there were 10 tables with 10 chairs at each, and I introduced Maureen, or the Minister welcomed us. I introduced Maureen. Maureen spoke, telling us a little bit about the work in Scotland. And then Dame Susan Devoy, because she thanked Maureen, because the Religious Diversity Centre had worked with the Human Rights Commission to organise the lunch. So it was a lunch event for people related to government and people related to the interfaith work in Wellington.
Mm. So it was really a stimulating event for me, you know, to be able to have a chance to talk to people from, you know, from Wellington and from government and from Interfaith and from the Human Rights Commission. And I was really impressed with the collegial atmosphere and the willingness to support interfaith engagement in New Zealand, right across New Zealand, whether that translates into finances. I mean, really, that's a question for government, and it's, you know, we're very, very privileged and lucky in Scotland in that our government takes very seriously good relations between people of all faiths and none, and they see having a national organisation as vital to, you know, to provide safe spaces for the dialogue to take place and to keep the work going and to support our network in Scotland of local interfaith groups. There's around 20 of them. So we get a fair amount of funding from the Scottish Government, but two of the local interfaith groups in Edinburgh and in Glasgow are also funded by the Scottish Government because they also recognise in the big cities that grassroots engagement is critical. So the work involves, you know, educational work, capacity building work, helping to respond when there's a crisis, you know, bringing the communities together, supporting religious leaders forums. We also have a summit, an annual summit with our First Minister, which we feel very honoured that she has us at her table, the religious leaders in Interfaith Scotland and others at the table to really dialogue about how to continue to build these good relations, to keep Scotland safe and secure, but also a place where there's not bigotry, there's not stereotyping, there's not hatred of the other, but a real sense of recognising our common ground as human beings and appreciation for the diversity rather than fear of it. I think it's pretty essential work, actually.
And at the at this meeting, this gathering at Parliament, did you also see the diversity of the people attending?
Yes, and we had some of the religious leaders were there. We had had the first religious leaders meeting in November in New Zealand. We had 23 leaders together, and they were invited yesterday. Of course, they couldn't all come, but I noticed that we had several of the religious leaders there, and that was good. They had come from outside of Wellington to mm-hmm. be there.
That's great. So, but I have to add that this interview is pre-recorded, so it will be played after Easter, which means that you went to Wellington on the 28th of March, correct?
Exactly. Right.
Okay, and but you also gave a very inspiring talk the other day.
Thank you. With a
very interesting title. You named the title Finding Faith in a Secular World: How Interfaith Engagement is Revolutionising Religion.
I know, it's an exciting talk, isn't it? One of the myths, I think, that is out there in the world is that somehow we are more increasingly inhabiting a secular world and that religion is not relevant. I think that is just inaccurate. And that the research that's done, for example, by the Pew Research Centre at an international level, where they've looked at 250 countries in the world to see, you know, what is the percentage of people or what are the percentage of people that are religiously affiliated, they found out that 84% of the world's population claim to have a religion. And that even of the 16% that say they're not religiously affiliated, they're very often deeply connected to spirituality, or they're interested in life after death, or they believe that there is a God. And so there's really a minority of people in the world that are completely secular, that are, you know, don't see a place for religion. We do live in a religiously affiliated world, and it's important to acknowledge that and to acknowledge the really great work that faith communities do at the global level.
Did you have the percentage of people that the Pew report discovered as being related to a religion?
Yes, 84%. 84%, 16 were non-religiously affiliated. However, in the likes of New Zealand and Scotland, there's a larger percent, so 40% in Scotland, and I mean roughly 40% in Scotland, roughly 40% in New Zealand, say they're not religiously affiliated. And I think that's a phenomenon of some Western countries. But even then, that will change because of migration, because of the current global crisis, so many people having to come to countries, you know, to Western countries, for example, for safety. And so they bring with them their religious diversity. I was in Dunedin, as it was mentioned earlier, and it was welcomed onto the Marae with Syrian refugees. And that was a very moving experience. But when chatting to Greg Hewson, who's the chaplain down in Dunedin, he said that they've welcomed 500 Syrian refugees to Dunedin. immediately that increases, of course, the Muslim population of Dunedin. So we're beginning to inhabit a world where religious diversity is the norm, and it's going to increasingly be the norm. So we need institutions that help create safe spaces for that norm, if you like, to be expressed, for people from different faith traditions to get to know each other, and for people who have no faith to get to know those who have religious faith, so that they don't have stereotypes or fears or anxieties around people who have a religious faith. And I think that's really going to be important for the stability of the globe, actually, but of both Scotland and New Zealand, that by engaging in dialogue, by sitting down and getting to know the person opposite you, whatever their faith or belief, it's a great thing to do.
We had last year the Auckland Interfaith Council organised an event on exploring sacred spaces, and we called it also Who is Your Neighbour? And to get to know your neighbour. That's exactly what you're saying, that the neighbour might be of a different religion, which is different to maybe 50 years ago. And so it's important to get to know the neighbour and also know something about the religion, that you don't offend each other.
That's right. But it's even not just about not offending. Sometimes you can get so much enjoyment from engaging. You know, if your neighbour who's a Hindu says, please, would you come round and celebrate Diwali with us, for example? It's not about not offending. It's about joining in, having fun, getting to know what people are doing. You know, it's there's lots of positive stuff. Yeah.
You can celebrate the whole year. There's always somebody who celebrates.
So true. That is so true.
But you also studied cultural history, you said in your presentation.
I did.
Did that influence the work regarding, well, you said the interfaith engagement is revolutionizing religion. So when you look at religion, do you see it also from the historic point, from the cultural history?
I do. And one of the things that I recognised when I was doing cultural history is that the base of every civilization on the planet, there is religious values. You know, whether it's Buddhism, whether it's Islam, whether it's Christianity, Judaism, that you'll find, you know, the literature, the architecture, there's just so much. It's almost like all of our cultural history is seeped in religious history too, and you can almost not separate the two. I mentioned I spent 5 years in Samoa, which I thoroughly enjoyed. You just have to spend time in the islands to know that the culture and the faith, they're merged together. There's just such Christianity is the basis of their culture in Samoa. And then you have all their traditional spirituality, traditional culture, the Maasai system, all the things that go there. And the two are almost inseparable. And I think if you start looking globally, diversity of religion is also diversity of culture. You know, there's such interesting to-in and fro-ing between religion and culture. And when I went to Samoa, it was really cultural anthropology along with cultural history and religious studies that I was doing. And in many ways, coming back to Scotland and doing interfaith work felt like doing a real mixture of anthropology, cultural history and religious studies. Because every time you go to a mosque or a gurdwara or a synagogue or a church or a Baha'i centre, if you go, there's a different culture. You know, there really is a different culture. You know, what is the gender relations like here? What's the hierarchy, the governance, the spiritual practices, the religious rituals? You know, it's almost like doing anthropology right on your doorstep. And it's so it's fantastic. I feel what I've been trained for and what I'm doing, they kind of work together. At least I hope they do.
Yeah. And with the interfaith work, do you involve a lot of young people also?
We do. This year is the Year of Young People in Scotland, so we're very excited about that. So, for example, on the 21st of April, we're having a national youth conference, and, you know, be young people from all over Scotland attending our national interfaith youth conference. It's going to be held at St Andrews University in Scotland. A young team of people, of interfaith young people, you know, from different faith traditions, called the Coexistence Team, have helped co-plan this conference with Interfaith Scotland, with our development officer and our international intern. And they've been working very, you know, closely together to make sure that the conference is relevant to young people, which is very exciting. And we've also just had some additional funding to do a number of events and set up structures during This year of young people, so we're employing a youth worker, and they're going to set up a national interfaith youth forum, so that when there are interfaith events for young, you know, designed by young people and led by young people, they'll feel relevant to young people. And when you go around the local interfaith groups in Scotland and in New Zealand, you'll see a really dedicated, you know, groups of volunteers, but many of them would be 40 plus, some 50 plus. And so I think for young people to think, oh, I'm really interested in interfaith engagement, and they go along to a meeting and round the table are a number of people much older than them, they might think, oh, I don't know if this is just quite for me. But when they see a vibrant group of other young people engaging in interfaith dialogue and, you know, overcoming the barriers, although young people don't have as many barriers as older people, I have to say, that I think it's great that there's going to be youth-led interfaith engagement in Scotland, and Interfaith Scotland will just help facilitate that, capacity build that, and back to the safe spaces, create safe spaces for that engagement to take place.
So you have a group of young people who will be organising this special event, and they are all rooted in their religion.
They are, yeah. And the coexistence team, there's Muslim, Christian, Jewish, and I think it was Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Hindu, and I think there was a Baha'i as well. So
I think that there was a group here in Auckland, and one girl was not even part of any religion. She was non-religious.
That was the coexistence group from France, and they were living interfaith on their world visitations, and one of the girls said she was atheist. But I've had a little group in our Religious Diversity Centre office recently, a couple of Hindu students and Muslim, and we talked about what they might like to offer their peer age group, and they came up with the idea of sponsoring visits to places of worship in Auckland. And they felt that especially for international students coming into the city from different faiths, it would be a social occasion where they could get together with other young people, but also have something to do together in visiting a place of worship.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
So it's just a little start.
Mm-hmm. And Maureen, you were also, I remember that you asked the question, what is religion? Or what is the purpose of religion?
I did. I always like, even in public events, to make sure there's a space for dialogue. And so when we're talking about religion and interfaith dialogue, I think the very first premise is, well, what is this faith? What is this religion that we're talking about? The inter bit of it, the bringing people together. And so to go right back to basics and look at the purpose of religion. And, you know, so people had an opportunity to dialogue about that and came up with so many, you know, really good things and things that would resonate. That religion is about connecting people with each other, connecting people with something greater than themselves, building community, working together for the common good, being of service to wherever they are. All religions have a sense of either salvation, liberation, enlightenment, you know, so something that helps you to look beyond just this particular phase of our existence, if you like, however you want to put it.
Meaning
and purpose, meaning, yeah. Purpose. And I mean, I can't deny that religion has sometimes been misused. You know, throughout history it has been misused, very often by people in power. But I think at the grassroots of life, you'll find in every synagogue, mosque, church, centre, people who are really doing the best that they possibly can for their communities. And that's something else I think that government is beginning to really recognise, just the, it's almost like the social glue or the community cohesion that's offered by really well-functioning good. In fact, this morning, my husband and I are in an Airbnb out in Epsom, and the people who own the Airbnb said to come up for a cup of coffee, and the woman mentioned that she was a Christian. And she then said, you know, I had cancer. And she said, for 6 months I was going through very difficult treatment. And she said, not one day during that 6 months did I have to cook a meal. My church, my local church, every night somebody from the church would come down with dinner for me and my children. And that's the unsung, you know, the untold stories of religious communities. It's just all the work they do to support community. And I think it's really important work. So I wanted people to unpick what they thought the purpose of religion was.
Yeah. But also the fact that you mentioned now as the first thing that came to your mind, connecting people. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially if you're maybe in a small religious group and you come to a new country and there are not many of your religion around, then you need to connect, because otherwise you'd be all by yourself. And interfaith is certainly helping a little bit. And if you have a majority Christian or a majority whatever other religion or even no religion, you still want to connect, and you need to sometimes build a bridge. Yes. To the other religion, to somebody else.
Yeah, and there's a lot of bridge building done in interfaith dialogue and engagement, a lot of bridge building. And when I say that interfaith dialogue is revolutionising religion, I think it's because traditionally and historically, religions have almost existed in isolation from each other. You know, in New Zealand, the majority would be Christian, perhaps, and then, you know, you might go somewhere else, Saudi Arabia or Dubai, and the majority would be Muslim. You might go to India. The majority there would be a mix. It's been historically quite a mix in India. But, you know, now we're finding that the mix is right on our doorstep. We don't have to travel far to get to know Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, Sikhs, and to get to know the religious other, whatever other is. And so interfaith dialogue is revolutionising the way we see religion, because again, some of the narrative of religion is, oh, they're always fighting, they don't get on, you know, there's been the Crusades, there's been this, there's been that. But actually, the current narrative is, especially if you're engaging in interfaith dialogue, that actually people do get on and they really enjoy the engagement with each other. And when they have difference or conflict in the way that they view the world, they've already developed the skills of dialogue. They can talk about those differences and say, well, this is my perspective, that's yours, and where's our common ground? So interfaith dialogue gives people incredible skills, and they're transferable skills. Actually, I think when people have engaged for a considerable length of time with interfaith dialogue, it would be hoped that they'd learn to become more diplomatic and more understanding, more compassionate, you know, because they've had to think outside of the box. It's not just, it's all my way, there's no other way to do it. You can begin to see that there's incredible diversity in the way that people live their lives, and that's okay. As long as that diversity doesn't impact negatively in others, obviously.
But also when you say that religion had negative impact in the history, states without religion, where religion was, where they tried to abolish religion, didn't have better history either.
Absolutely not. And it is about human beings. We have choices, whether we're religious or not, to live good lives or bad lives. Under communism, in, you know, all sorts of countries, there was real brutalization of people because they were religious. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, it's not like the history is not really just about religions having a problem. It's about human beings learning to live together and sometimes struggling to do that.
Yeah, thank you very much for all your work you're doing for interfaith. Thank you, Jocelyn. And I think the two of you could speak for hours and tell us all about your experiences in the interfaith work. Thank you very much for what you're doing, and thank you for coming here to the studio.
Thank you, Beate. And also thank the Religious Diversity Centre of New Zealand for really inviting me to come, and they're doing fantastic work in New Zealand.
Yeah, thank you. And let's have a quick look at what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Centre. We have our Ecology Series with Mary Betts and Sister Bridget Crisp on the 10th of April and the 12th of April. The first part is Exploring Ecology and Eco-Spirituality. And the second one is Who is My Neighbor? And then we have on Saturday, the 28th of April, a retreat day with Fran Francis and Chris Telfer. The title is Air, Water, Fire, Stone, an Elemental Retreat, inspired by John O'Donohoe's book, Four Elements, Reflections on Nature. For all events at our centre, please register with us per phone at 09638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. Thank you to ladies for having come.
And thank you. Thank you, Beate.
And I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead.